All right, this morning, we're going to look at Baptist history. If you remember, last week, we spoke of George Washington. We're doing a series just once a month on God's providence in American history, and we talked about that last week. We left off, we're doing a three-part series on Washington, and we left off with him being appointed commander-in-chief of the American armies. In 1775, and that's where we left off. But this week, I bring that up because we want to talk about the same time period. I want to back up a few years, though, to 1771 and talk about something in Baptist history, very wonderful moment in Baptist history and yet a very, very difficult moment in Baptist history. But we'll explain that. But and this time, I think it's May of 1771, we're going to talk about what historians call really the first shots of the American Revolution, or some refer to it as actually it's 5 years away from the American Revolution, but the first battle of the war. And the reason for this is, the reason that historians talk about that in that way is that from a secular standpoint, this battle, this time, was a battle over taxation without representation. And that's what the secular historians talk about. But from a spiritual standpoint, this is absolutely a spiritual battle against religious freedom and specifically against Baptists, and we'll talk about that. Now, I want to back up again. I hope this doesn't confuse you. But if you recall, I talk about this moment in time all the time. This is one of my favorite. This is my favorite moment in American history. But in 1755, Jules Stearns will make his way down from New England to North Carolina, and he will begin with his brother-in-law, Daniel Marshall, the Sandy Creek Baptist Church. The Holy Spirit would then use Jubal Stearns and Daniel Marshall to begin really what is the greatest revival in American history. Revival spread through North Carolina, Virginia, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, and even into areas that were not colonies yet. It would go all the way to Oklahoma later as the Indian moved through the South and to the West. But so this is the time we're talking about, and the separate Baptists in North Carolina just chafed under these taxes. They were horrendous. These, in a sense, poor Baptist farmers were just unjustly taxed. One of the side effects of all this revival and people being saved is, if you think about it, this became a huge threat to the state church, to the Anglican Church. Literally, more than half the population is Baptist at this point in some of those areas. Just thousands and thousands of people being saved, hundreds of churches being started, just an amazing time. And as you can imagine, the state church in Virginia and in North Carolina, these are colonies under British rule at this point, were Anglican. They were state churches. The Anglican church and the government were one, essentially. And so the governor that was appointed by the king was a man by the name of William Tryon, T-R-Y-O-N, Tryon, William Tryon. And he was a British appointed governor. And I will say this about him. He was an Anglican zealot. And he really thought his job was to destroy the Baptists. That is what he decided his job was. Maybe he was told that, or maybe he decided that. But he was a wicked, sadistic man, and he began to level these horrendous taxes on these people. There were many taxes. They were, you know, general sale of goods taxes and property taxes and payroll poll taxes. The second tax that was especially onerous to the non-Anglicans was a parish tax, where you had to pay a tax to support the local Anglican church. And that was something that irked the colonists all through Virginia and North Carolina. But then came the Marriage Act. And that was that unless you were married by the Church of England, your marriage was null and void. You were not married. Now think of the problems that causes, all right? Everything that is an advantage to being married is suddenly illegal. Your children are illegitimate. It's amazing what that does if you think about it. If suddenly they said that all of our marriages were illegal. So That was essentially a way to get the Baptists not to participate in society, and you know, and you can think of all the ramifications of that. So we have this principle of taxation without representation, and that is festering at the same time up on the East Coast, up in Massachusetts especially, and the citizens of New England will retaliate, you know, will react to that, and the war will come in a few years. But in North Carolina, this principle precedes all that, and that's happening in New England. Now, I'm having to simplify for time's sake, and so you can imagine this, you know, these horrendous taxes on essentially what were Shubal Stearns's members, the poor farmers, what have you. Tryon, he also, one of the things he did with his money was he built the governor's palace, and it's just what it sounds like. If you, it's in New Bern, Mrs. McGee, so there's a palace there still. William Tryon, unfortunately, is still considered a hero by the secular world. I'll explain some of that in just a minute. But this was just, you know, horrendous taxes, and on it went. Well, the governor then decided he was going to raise a militia. The taxes weren't doing the job. He was going to raise a militia and go after the Baptists and just finish them off. And so when the Baptists and other folks saw, they had put themselves together in a group called, and kind of a group of protesters, I'd call it, called the Regulators. You can read about the Regulators in history. The Regulators were primarily made up of Baptists, dissenters, Baptists, Presbyterians, and Quakers. Those were the dissenting religious groups in the areas, the three main ones. And the Quakers weren't going to be a problem because they're pacifists, so they're not going to pick up arms. Tryon knew that. So they're not going to pick up arms. They're pacifists. The Presbyterians, he successfully drove a wedge between the Presbyterians and the Baptists and got the Presbyterians to side with him somehow. And so here he is. He's segregated the Baptists out, literally raises an army, and he's going to essentially Sandy Creek Baptist Church to wipe them out. So when the Regulators saw that was happening, they, of course, put together a militia to meet them. So they gathered 2,000 farmers and deacons and what have you. And it wasn't just the Baptists. There were other citizens involved. But they wanted to meet this army that was coming to North Carolina. So the lines were drawn. 2,000 essentially British troops and militia met the Regulators, and a long battle ensued that day in May of 1771. In the end, only 18 lives were lost. 9 Regulators died. Nine militia died. And however, the Regulators were really not organized, and they were routed. They had to run in defeat. Tryon won that battle. And the governor, Tryon, he believed that there was a specific Baptist preacher named Joseph Murphy who had organized the Regulators, and he wanted his life. And so he went and camped basically right next to Sandy Creek Baptist Church on some property there, on a farmer's property there in North Carolina, looking for that pastor. I don't know if this is probably a disciple of Shubal Stearns, actually. So this Joseph Murphy, he was not to be found. And what's interesting about that, just a little note in history, is he was taken in by a family, Daniel Boone's parents, who are godly Christian people, and they're hiding him on their farm. They couldn't find him. So he did the next best thing, and the land that he was encamped on, Tryon was encamped on, was a deacon of Shubal Stearns named Benjamin Merrill. And Merrill was captured, he was convicted as a traitor, and he was hanged publicly. His body was cut into pieces and scattered. Just a horrible thing, one of the Shubal Stearns deacons. He would be one of 7 Baptists that Tryon would kill and hang and kill publicly for the resistance. The Boston Gazette, a few months later, told the story, and they gave the following report. They said, Merrill died in the most heroic manner, his children being around him in the place of his execution. He declared that he died at peace with his maker and in the cause of his oppressed countrymen. So William Tryon had won the day. He had accomplished his will. He had intimidated the Separate Baptists. What happened next, it's kind of a sad thing. Schuylkill Stearns would die later that year. His ministry personally would be over. He would die and go to be with the Lord. But because of that battle, 1,500 families, not 1,500 people, but 1,500 families would scatter south and southwest into what is basically wilderness at that point, what will become Tennessee. You know, that seems like a very sad moment. But in spite, and maybe rather than being a defeat, this proved to be a great victory because everywhere these Baptists went, they preached the gospel. It's kind of reminiscent of Acts chapter 8, where when the Christians were scattered because of persecution, they went everywhere preaching Christ, Acts chapter 8 talks about. And that is exactly what happened. These church members scattered, and with them they took their testimonies and their witness, and they continued then that revival that Schuylkill Stearns has started. It's really a glorious moment in Baptist history if you think about it. As for William Tryon, he had won that battle, as I mentioned. Later that year, he was called to New York to become the governor of New York. And he went to New York, really kind of a hero in the world's eyes. But he would meet his defeat a few years later at the hands of George Washington and the Continental Army. So his day is coming. But, you know, we serve a God who rules all events. And as you read this, really what maybe is a very sad moment, think if the government came in here and hung seven of us. What a horrible moment that would be. That's exactly what happened. And history, secular historians don't give the Baptists justice, but it was the Baptists that were hung and killed. And what appeared to be a loss for the Separate Baptists resulted in an open door for the expansion of the gospel all across what would be known then as the West and the Southwest. I read a historian who said this. I think his comment is very interesting. He said this. He said, "Let us accept whatever the Lord allows us in our lives and determine that we will serve him regardless of the circumstances." He's talking about this event. "We do not know what the future holds, but we know who holds the future." And what a wonderful comment I think that was. And I want to thank the Lord this morning for our wonderful history, for those historic Baptists that fought and died for the Lord's cause.